ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm pleased to have Dave Allen joining me today as co-host, and we're going to be bringing you our opinions and commentary on today's political and economic issues. Today is July 15th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Gosh, that sounds so foreboding. We're halfway through the year. Happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you, too. And it's funny because all you hear is, you know, Hallmark. I know at least all the women out there watch the Hallmark Christmas movies in December. Well, they run them again in July, for Christmas in July. And I don't watch them, of course, but maybe once in a while. But does your wife watch them?
No, I don't think so. She has other favorites, I believe.
Yeah. So, but the point is, Christmas in July, Christmas in December. It's just a short. Let me be the first to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Hey, back at you.
And a Happy New Year. Well, you know, we got kind of a little bit of a gift today. Gold didn't do too bad. It was down. It's in the New York spot price aftermarket, down a buck at $1,415. It was lower in the day, but it's just slowly, you know, clawing its way back. Silver was up 17 cents today at 1547. You have platinum up $13 at 847, and palladium was up 17 at 1566. You have the USDX today is stronger, 0.13, and of course that's what gold was battling, the 96.95. Crude oil was down 0.84 at 59.37. Paper markets today, you had the Dow up 26 points at 27,358. The NASDAQ was up 14 at 8,258. The S&P basically unchanged at 3,014. And let's see, 10-year yield down 0.01 at 2.09%. Let's see what the futures contract is. That was oil. Let's see. Okay, where's gold? Gold. August contract is reading 1415. So not a lot of difference between that and spot. And let's see, what else do we have here? Anything else to peek at? Anything that was exciting in the markets? Pretty much not.
Treasury yields down slightly.
Yeah.
You mentioned that.
Yeah, I did. Euro was 113. That was down 0.13. You know, so really it was a very strange day. It's a typical Monday. News is quiet. In fact, Monday is spent talking about what happened on the weekend. So that's why you really don't get any more action on Monday, because everybody is just thinking about what happened on the weekend. And, you know, it's just, again, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of noise out there. And if you behave accordingly, they got you. Then you're being manipulated by all that noise out there. And but anyway, so gold edged a little lower today, just slightly. You had the global stock markets, they kind of gained. And everybody's kind of waiting for some data coming out this week. You have the U.S. retail sales, you have industrial production. You know, everybody's looking for them about clues. You know, it just goes on and on and on, and yet we all know where exactly this is all headed. We did look at some world shares. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that the world shares were just, you know, ready to go into the depths of, you know, whatever. And now they're looking at an 18-month high. It's just good grief.
Well, gold investors know that, you know, we're climbing the beanstalk as we speak.
True.
Waiting patiently for the prices to zoom up through the clouds. The Fed's also releasing its beige book on Wednesday. You know, that's their report of, you know, how trade tensions have affected the business outlook. But overall, the outlook for gold remains extremely positive. It's not just our words, it's many analysts. Not just precious metal either. You know, with gold likely to stay supported on expectations of Fed rate cut at the end of the month, and concerns of continuing global slowdown. There's more and more evidence of that. So, you know, this is now the new earnings season, the second quarter report of earnings. You know, the general consensus is that earnings will be slightly to significantly lower than the first quarter as, you know, the effects of tax cuts, you know, wear off. And as the continuing trade war between the U.S. and China, you know, even though there's a so-called truce and, you know, no further tariffs have been ramped up, still a lot of uncertainty there about if, much less when, you know, that will be resolved. You know, most analysts expect S&P 500 earnings to have fallen by 3% in the second quarter, and the market still expects a July Fed rate cut of at least 25 basis points. That's that really at 100%, according to the CME Group's FedWatch tool, Melody.
Again, it just goes to show how really desperate to keep this economy going, and I guess we'll continue. Usually we're not at this stage until the actual election year. So the things that they're doing in order to keep this economy strong and everything positive is what they would be doing next year at this time. I don't know what they're going to be doing next year. You know, because usually it's always an election. This isn't the election year. So
praying.
Basically, because they're pulling out all the stops just to keep this going now. And, but anyway, it's amazing what they can pull out of their hats.
It's amazing. It yes. is indeed. You know, and more on the economic cloud hanging over our country right now is that, you know, despite the year being more than halfway over, the pace of store closures doesn't appear to be slowing down in the retail industry. You know, more companies piled in the bad news this week. So far, over 7,000 store closures have been announced by U.S. retailers in 2019, and the tally could top 12,000 by the end of the year. That would set a new record, according to CoreSite research. Last year, CoreSite tracked 5,524 store closures, down more than the all-time high of over 8,100 announced the year before. Now, with back-to-school shopping season and winter holidays looming, it seems like, you know, there's always a season around the corner looming, Melody. Most retailers planning to shut stores this year have already shuffled through those announcements so they can shift their focus toward the industry's busiest times.
You know, if you look at 12,000 stores, that's a lot of employees that's getting canned. And again, you have the multiplier effect in there. The multiplier was times three. It was always the, you know, how many people that it actually affects, you know, from a layoff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I can't imagine. Let me ask you a question. Since they're always adapting different equations to, since everything is going more to an online purchasing, I mean, of course, that's the excuse they're giving. I think there's other deeper fundamental reasons why you're seeing a lot of these shops close down, but we'll just say it's the online. People are going for convenience. Wouldn't it change the equation on how to get some of these economic stats? Because you're really not comparing apples to apples. I mean, the online selling is a whole different beast. And wouldn't it have some changes somewhere along the line? And this is just coming through my mind now, so I haven't really thought about it. But
No, clearly. Any good economic model, particularly forecasting model, is going to take into account actual statistics. And, you know, when there aren't actual statistics, the only thing you have to go on really is, you know, the most recent or a trend over a period of, you know, 3, 5, 10 years. Even 10 years in this sense, in this case, is probably dubious because, you know, who had heard or, you know, Amazon Prime, was that even around 10 years ago? So, you know, these economists run these regression analyses all the time, constantly updating their data inputs. And, you know, so you're right. I mean, how reliable are they in terms of their impact on, you know, employment and the overall growth and the overall economy? It's a good question. I mean, you know, my experience is that, you know, you do your best, you try and be honest and forthright, and sometimes you're almost never right. Sometimes you're closer than others. That's the only thing I can say.
Well, we're talking about government numbers here, so, you know, they're never going to be forthright and honest. But my thing, I mean, everybody talks about Amazon taking all the business off of these main street, but, you know, I mean, it doesn't, you might see these loss of jobs, but I mean, the whole economic picture is changing, and I don't know, it's because I would think, if this is changing, not only are we seeing these store closures, but that even if we're relating to the purchasing going online, it still has to be like a double negative, if there is such a thing, you know, both would be a negative.
The reinforcing. I know what you're saying.
You know, you
well, no, it's an important it's an important point. I mean, how much of these closures are due to Amazon as opposed to stagnant disposable income, you know, at the household level? You know, how accurate are the unemployment, the jobless numbers, the new jobs added?
So it's all,
you know, that we hear. Yeah, you're right. So there's always a leap of faith here, and it just, once again, we use this term critical thinking. One, just pay attention, be aware, but question. I mean, really question, and to the extent you can, you know, look deeper into, you know, what we're being told.
Well, you know, I said a long time ago what they could do with these malls is there's so many homeless and the elderly and the senior housing that's got to be needed, that they could turn a lot of these malls into housing projects.
I think it's a terrific idea. And I got to believe that is, you know, more and more of these malls, you know, are affected by these store closures, that's certainly going to become, you know, maybe it's the new model. I mean, there's one mall about 20 miles from where I live, that's, you know, has more and more vacant store fronts that is probably maybe one third of it now, on two levels, is now, you know, part of a local health network with doctor's offices, you know, even a, you know, an imaging center. I suspect that, you know, if, you know, this continues, this could be one day, you know, completely or, you know, mainly a health center. So why not homeless? Yeah, why not affordable housing for seniors? Yeah. Absolutely.
So these malls are being reinvented. And but amid all those closings, there's still retailers that are opening stores, Dave.
Isn't that something?
I know. CoreSite has tracked 3,000 store opening announcements so far this year. Lululemon. Now, how successful? Now, if you're seeing stores close, why would you, and particularly a computer, you know, an online retailer? Lululemon opened its biggest store ever in Chicago. I thought Lululemon was strictly online.
Well, I guess it has a few in the biggest population centers in the country. This was surprising to see, you know, in this massive new mall, the American Dream. Well,
of all places, New Jersey.
one can hope.
Jersey. A 3 million square foot mall, Dave. As you said, it's called the American Dream.
I hope it's beachfront.
I don't know. I don't know what a normal mall footage is, square footage is, but
I would think a million, a little over a million, million two.
Oh, and that one in Minneapolis, that's doing so well.
The Mall of America, yeah.
You know, so I don't know, but maybe they're just figuring, you know, the number of, you know, it's a numbers game maybe, but the one in Jersey is that's ready to open on October, you know, the end of October sometime. And but those that are closing, you have Fred said that it's going to shutter another 129 stores this year. It's already planning to close 263 shops in 2019. Bed Bath and Beyond, they closed to at least 40 locations this year. Yeah, but they're opening a few of those. Dress Barn, we all know that that's going out of business.
Lots of others as well.
Yeah. Here's another guy, the New York Fed. How much time do we have? A couple minutes. In addition to being the longest economic expansion in U.S. history, we need to redefine that economic expansion. It's just not the stock market, ladies and gentlemen, but I guess. But anyway, we can. That's another day. There's another warning indicator, recession, that's been flashing red in 2019. And the latest of these is the New York Fed's Recession Probability Index. Those who have been skeptical about the economic recovery and the robust economy had some good reasons to do so. Now there's just one more reason recession alarms are sounding. In the past, every time since 1960 that this index has breached 30%, a recession followed. It rose to 32.9% in June. And, of course, the gold-silver ratio, weakness in auto sales, housing, manufacturing, earnings, capital spending, all these indicators are foreshadow a coming recession. And the most worrying part of recession is that not only have most Americans not recovered from the last one, but many are blissfully unaware that an economic downturn is just around the corner, Dave.
Yeah, the storm is coming. You know, as the mainstream media continues lambasting the American public with tales of an epic and monumental recovery, the data and actual facts continues to rise to the surface. For example, as we reported last week, Bankrate.com recently reported that a growing number of Americans have no savings whatsoever, meaning if an emergency occurs, they'll have no option but to go into debt. Or if they have bad credit, worse, they have no way to pay for an emergency. Over 25%, 28% of adults in the U.S. have no emergency savings. It's according to Bankrate's latest financial security index. One in four do have a rainy day fund, but it's not enough money to cover 3 months' worth of living expenses. You know, that's, you know, that means a job loss or one missed paycheck would put almost a third of Americans into financial hardship.
Well, that is just really amazing. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. It's amazing that this first break, this first segment of the program is over. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We will find you acting on your best behavior.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We always know what to say here at Discount Gold and Silver and on Financial Survival Radio Show. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Thank you for joining the program today. And our website is dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. Dave, I think this is really interesting, and I'm not sure too many people know about what is happening coming tomorrow. The elites are getting together and they're talking about money.
How about it? Go figure.
Go figure.
Tomorrow, Tuesday, ladies and gentlemen, marks the G7 nations commemoration of the historic and still controversial Bretton Woods Agreement of 1944. They're commemorating it with a conference that features a who's who of the international financial establishment, with a couple of academics thrown in. The conference, sponsored by the Bank of France, in Paris, is titled Bretton Woods, 75 Years Later, Thinking About the Next 75. Now, the four stated session themes of the conference that we picked up are this: reflecting on global economic turbulence and dealing with crises, reflecting on trade, promoting global goods to foster inclusive and sustainable development.
Is that sustainable?
Go ahead. And here you go. An international monetary system for the 21st century.
So it seems like the world order is alive and well, ladies and gentlemen. Question, did we send anybody there? Was there anybody?
Well, I read that Jerome Powell was going to be a keynote speaker, but I didn't see him listed in the online program, online conference program. There are a couple of academics from U.S. Universities. Most of them are European heads of central banks, current and former. But so I'll be interested to see if, in fact, Powell and or other Fed governors are there.
As you said, they've really kept this a little under the radar.
Indeed.
Indeed. Again, it's just another day, and they're this is a whole program on its own. But we'll see what comes out of there, if there's anything worth reporting on this. So, and you're right. We'll have to talk to James Corbett about to see what he has to say when I talk to him next week. And anything else you'd like to conclude on that?
No, not really. I mean, if you're interested in listening to some of the sessions and speeches, I just suggest searching YouTube if you have internet beginning on Wednesday, the day after the conference concludes.
All right. Company earnings. A lot of companies will be reporting their second quarter results here in the next couple of weeks, and giving us a first chance to hear directly from a wide variety of businesses since the U.S. and China agreed to resume trade talks. So this so-called truce followed months of tensions, as we all know. And, of course, it has caused uncertainty, logistics headaches. Certainly has been difficult for U.S. manufacturers who have borne a lot of the brunt, along with our American farmers. Mm-hmm. They have also borne a big part of this dispute so far, brunt of this dispute. And many of them warned as recently as April that the worst was yet to come. So, you know, we have people looking closely at the five bellwether companies whose earnings will be closely watched for any type of tariff trouble or even triumph, Dave.
Apple, Boeing, Caterpillar, Ford, Intel. Those five have been particularly hit by the sanctions on Huawei, the Chinese giant telecommunications company. You know, they've dealt a blow to suppliers like Micron Technology. Micron, for example, is 57% of its annual sales coming from China. Intel, 27%, Apple, 20%, Boeing, 14%. I mean, we're not enamored by any of these companies, don't get us wrong. But particularly these large companies, which, you know, certainly have a significant effect on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, to an extent NASDAQ, and, you know, the overall S&P 500. Yeah, it's important to, you know, understand how things that affect them could affect the paper and the gold and silver markets. So, Ford, too, you know, along with other global automakers, are especially susceptible to tariffs and to Chinese economic growth, where a lot of, you know, Ford's and GM's and Daimler Chrysler's growth, you know, is pointed toward.
You know, it's interesting because these five companies are pretty much the same part of the group. There's a small group of companies that's pushing these pricing on the markets higher and higher. It isn't all of them. It isn't all of them that's doing so good, but there's a certain percentage that it's just a handful, and these are a handful of those. So, yeah, you're right. It is important to see what happens to these because they've been really pulling up the stock market, just and these are part of that group. Are these all Dow? These aren't all Dow components, are they? No.
All of them, I don't know anymore. Intel, Apple, Micron, I don't think so. But
Micron,
I think
no.
Intel, Apple, and Boeing, I think, are all Dow Jones.
I think Caterpillar is, too.
Caterpillar, yeah, thanks.
All right. Well, you know, talking about the tariffs, Dave, and that the truce is coming off, but has it affected China's economy?
Well, the short answer appears to be yes. Chinese GDP rose what seems like a robust 6.2% in the second quarter from a year ago, but that's below the 6.4% expansion in the first quarter. You know, in June, Chinese factory output and retail sales growth beat estimates, while investment in the first half of the year also gave some further evidence that Chinese stimulus measures to curb its slowdown are beginning to have an effect. Now, the second quarter slowdown underlines the pressure that Chinese policymakers face as they attempt to negotiate a trade deal with us, while the economy takes another step down in the long-term deceleration from recent expansion. Well, certainly, you know, although Chinese negotiators are reportedly talking with their U.S. counterparts again, there's no certainty that a deal is going to be reached, you know, anytime soon to prevent further economic damage to China, U.S., and other countries.
Well, you know, I had an article the other day. I don't have it on my desk, but it talked about the various countries, companies, the manufacturers that are leaving China, and they're all going to Vietnam. A large part of them are going to Vietnam. And so again, you have to ask yourself, is China's economy dropping because manufacturers are leaving and going to Vietnam because of the tariffs, or how much of that equals the U.S. buying, purchasing,
right,
declining?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we know that there's both of those phenomena. That'd be interesting to see in, you know, the next quarter or two, how that all pans out in terms of, you know, how much of, you know, their growth or slowdown in growth is attributable to those factors.
But will anybody come out and actually declare, you know, if there was a loss because of the U.S. declining? Because, I mean, how much do we get how much product do we get from China? All our trinkets? A lot. So,
well, that's a good point. I mean, it depends on, you know, what we know, dependent on what they tell us, what they report. Mm-hmm. And how much will they report and how accurate will it be?
Yeah. So, anything else that you'd like to include on that report, Dave?
No. No.
All right. So, what's next? You talk about in our newsletter article about a full-blown currency war on the horizon. I've always been a believer that we are in a currency war. It just goes through various stages. So, but the listeners can pick up this newsletter from our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, or even our Facebook page, and that is at dgscoins. At DGS Coins. So you wrote about this, about a full-blown currency war. Tell us a little bit more.
Well, if PIMCO's Joachim Fell's viewpoint is any indication, you're leading the way with your perspective, Melody. I mean, he thinks that the currency war can no longer be ruled out. You know, and his views in line with an increasing number of Wall Streeters, be they investors, traders, or analysts. I mean, these analysts are warning that, you know, our president's repeated complaints about the foreign exchange practices of our key trading partners, China and others, heightens the risk of U.S. intervention to weaken the dollar. Now, in 2010, Brazil's finance minister, Guido Mantega, coined the phrase currency wars to describe the competition between China, Japan, and the U.S. to have the lowest currency value. You know, at the time, his country's currency was suffering from a record high value, which was hurting Brazil's economic growth.
Some listeners who are new to the financial markets and precious metals may not know the purpose of a currency war.
Well, a currency war, as we know it, some call it competitive devaluation. Countries engage in currency wars to gain an advantage in international trade. You know, when countries devalue their currencies, they make their exports less expensive in foreign markets. So businesses theoretically export more, become profitable, and create new jobs. So as a result, the countries devaluing their currency benefit from stronger economic growth. Currency wars also encourage investment in that nation's assets. The stock market thus becomes less expensive to foreign investors. Now, that foreign direct investment increases as the country's businesses become relatively cheaper. Foreign companies, you know, may also buy up natural resources and commodities.
Well, how does it work?
Well, exchange rates determine the value of one country's currency versus another. A country in a currency war deliberately lowers that value, its value, the value of its currency. Countries with fixed exchange rates just make an announcement. Most countries fix their rates to the U.S. dollar because it's the global reserve currency. But most countries are on a flexible exchange rate, not fixed. They have to increase the money supply to lower the currency's value. So when supply is more than demand, the value of the currency drops. A central bank like the Fed has a bunch of tools to increase the money supply by expanding credit. It does this by lowering interest rates. Not the only way, but mainly. It can also add credit to the reserves of the nation's banks. That's called open market operations, or as we like to call it in our country, quantitative easing. And that's what the Fed did during and after the Great Recession of 2018, up until 2016. So a country's government can also influence the currency's value with expansionary fiscal policy. So it does that by spending more or cutting taxes. But most of the time, it does it for political reasons. Not to engage in a currency war per se.
But you point out that the Fells describes current conditions as a cold currency war, round 3, that's at risk of escalating?
Well, and therein lies your or confirmation of your viewpoint that we're in a currency war. Yes, he thinks we're in sort of phase three, or he calls it round three. I mean, he thinks that, you know, following the pause since early 2018, the cold currency war, that's the cold war of currency that's been waging between, you know, us, China, and a couple of others for more than 5 years is flaring up again. And Fell says even an escalation to a full-blown currency war with direct intervention by the U.S. and other major governments or their central banks to weaken their currencies can no longer be ruled out. Now, Trump's call for the Fed to cut interest rates, as well as signals from the European Central Bank, plus the People's Bank of China, and plus the Bank of Japan, that hint at further easing measures, has inflamed global currency tensions. You know, near-term intervention by the Fed, likely as early as the end of this month, or the federal government, likely before the end of the year or early next year, around talks of the 2020 federal budget or the increase in the debt ceiling, both those to weaken the dollar. Well, Fells thinks it remains unlikely. I think it's more likely that both of those agencies, institutions, will weaken the dollar. Even though, you know, there's still unresolved questions like, you know, whether the Treasury has adequate firepower to have that big of an effect, you know, with the Fed funds rate right now at just 2.35%.
But I got a question for you. When the dollar started increasing, when they started increasing rates, the dollar went as high as 103. Now we're at 97, a little over, you know, a little under 97.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, if we lower rates now, if they begin to lower rates now, they really are playing a dangerous game. Because here they're raising rates, and the dollar was even declining while they were raising rates, because we had a high of 103 and it backed off to 96.97 while they were in the raising rate mode.
Yeah, it just goes to show, among other things, that it's not just what a given country does to its own currency, it's the cumulative or the compounding effect of, you know, what's going on, what other nations and central banks are doing as well.
Yeah.
Check out today's edition, ladies and gentlemen. It'll be out sometime after today's program.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And again, it was a quiet day in the markets. It was even a quiet day here at Discount Gold and Silver. There's so much going on. And again, everybody just absorbs and are all doing their quarterbacking for everything that went on this weekend, tweets released and so forth. It's just like, you know, oh, come on, let's move on, ladies and gentlemen. Get over it. Yeah. And but there's some small interesting articles that I think is Russia has launched a new telescope into space. It looks like everybody is having all of a sudden this new interest in space, and to me, I don't like it. They did launch this new telescope. It's a major milestone for their space science program. And this telescope potentially paves the way for the mapping of the cosmos at a level of detail never before achieved. Now, I would say cosmos and convert that to Earth, but, you know, I guess it can do both, or maybe they already have such a good scope on Earth. I mean, they can look at what Google Zoom can do, or Google Earth. It's frightening. It's not frightening. It's just irritating. But the Spectre RG telescope, a Russian-German joint venture, was successfully delivered into orbit by a Russian Proton M rocket, and that was this weekend. The rocket was launched following repeated delays, and so it's kind of interesting on where it's going.
Millions of miles from Earth to L2, Lagrange point number 2. I didn't know this. These Lagrange points are unique positions in our solar system where objects can maintain their position relative to the sun and planets that orbit it. So L2 is a popular parking place for observatories as it offers a clear view of deep space. Good Lord. You know, once there, the telescope's goal will be to conduct a complete X-ray survey of the sky, you know, carried out with what they call outstanding sensitivity. And again, should be the first ever map of the universe in high energy X-rays, essential to solve the core questions of modern cosmology. How about that? So does this mark a new space war between Russia and the U.S.? This is the first Russian spacecraft to venture beyond Earth's orbit since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991.
You know, there has been a lot of interest in the skies lately. I mean, we're trying to, you know, we're funding billions and billions of dollars. More and more, everyone is trying to get up there. You have Japan trying to get to asteroids. You have now Russia and China's, you know, so there is I'd like to know what the true reason, what is the true goal?
Let's focus on that asteroid we talked about a couple weeks ago. That has $1.3 billion worth of gold for every man, woman, and child on Mother Earth.
Well, let's see. A couple of headlines from various places I'm just going to go through real quick, so we don't have much time left. We have Somali forces. Over the weekend, Dave, Somali forces ended an all-night siege on a hotel, and there was a death toll of 26 people, And of course, there was a prominent Canadian Somali journalist and several other foreigners. And there were two Americans, one Canadian and one Brit. 56 people, including two Chinese, were injured at this hotel. And I guess it was done by a bomb. And yes, so there's a lot of violence everywhere. Yeah. And there was a case of the first Ebola, Dave?
Yeah, in the city of Goma. It's home to more than 2 million people. Congo's first Ebola case. You know, it's near the eastern border neighboring Rwanda, which has been preparing for possible cases since an outbreak began there almost a year ago. Person with the confirmed case is a pastor who had been in one of the small towns and marks an escalation of Congo's Ebola crisis. Started last August, already the second deadliest in history.
So not only the New Orleans, I'm glad that storm wasn't, you know, unless you're actually flooded out. If you're flooded, it doesn't matter the severity of the storm. I mean, it's devastating to those that are affected by it. Even it doesn't matter if it's Hurricane 20 or, you know, little rising. It's devastating if you're flooded. And but New Orleans didn't get, I guess, all their levees held and everything was good. And but 45 people were killed in Nepal. Flooding and landslides triggered by heavy rainfall have killed at least 45 people in the past couple of days, and I guess more are reported across the Himalayan border in India. So,
yeah, yucky, crazy, yeah. sad stuff.
Baby boomers, I think about retiring. I would never close the company, but I do think about retiring. And about the day we quit. But where do we live? The idea of spending life as a retiree in a quaint New England cottage or sunny California condo, it might seem a little appealing, Dave, but that might not be the best option. Bankrate recently updated its ranking of the best and worst states to retire for 2019. To come up with the ranking, it considered five major categories related to the list to the life of the retiree and weighted them according to importance, affordability, wellness, weather, culture, crime. These factors and their weightings were chosen based on a separate survey which asked participants to rank what they care most about in retirement. And the top answer was friends and family. So who are the favorite states?
Well, the favorites, Nebraska, interestingly, is the best state to retire to, according to, you know, the weightings of these five criteria. Yes, the Cornhusker state ranked within the top 15 for factors such as wellness, affordability, and the top half for crime and culture. The only factor where it didn't fare so well was weather, presumably because of the cold winter temperatures. Rounding out the top five were neighbor Iowa, Missouri, South Dakota, where my RV traveling friends have moved from Pennsylvania to establish residency, although they continue around the country, and Florida. Adrian Garcia, who's a data analyst for Bankrate, said, you know, we have this area in the heartland that does really well. He noted that given their proximity, most of the top states have similar weather patterns. Missouri, certainly Iowa and Nebraska close to one another. South Dakota probably colder, probably milder in the not so hot in the summer. Florida, well, that's another story, but to each his or her own.
I don't want to talk about the worst state.
Well, you know that I was going to make a comment, you know, that this may not be so pleasurable for all listeners. You can even bypass it, Melody. It might be too hard to even mention.
Oh, but Maryland.
Now that's just according to Bankrate's criteria
and their right. Maryland ranked as the worst state to retire. It fell within the bottom 15 for affordability. I agree with that. Culture, wellness, 13th worst. I agree with that. While also underperforming in crime, the only factor that fell within the top half of the rankings, the weather. The beach and the weather. I guess we'll put up with all those nasty things just as long as we can have the beach and the weather.
And take away the sand, ladies and gentlemen.
I think most everyone else can guess the following states as far as the worst states. Of course, these are no surprises. New York, Alaska. And Alaska's interesting. We all know the weather, but it was tied for the worst crime. So few people. Perhaps that's why Illinois and, of course, Washington. And these rankings assume that you give the same weight to the ranking criteria that Bankrate did. So if you rank wellness, culture, and weather a lot higher than crime and affordability, the five best would be Hawaii, Vermont, New Hampshire, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. And then we go into the worst. So it's kind of interesting. So we got the best and the worst. Nebraska, the best. Maryland, the worst.
Yeah, if you're interested in this and, you know, selecting, you know, weighting these criteria according, you know, to your own perspective, you know, go to our Facebook page at DGS Coins. We've got this article up there, and you can just go into it, and you can see a section with a drop-down box that lets you select these weightings and, you know, see how it works out for you.
Well, I think coming into this election, we all know that our election is the software. The state election software is still vulnerable to cyber attack. Dave?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, Pennsylvania, where I live, you know, last year, you know, their message was clear. The state was taking a big step to try and keep its elections from being hacked next year. You know, its top election official told counties last April they had to update their systems. That's the elected's Secretary of State. So far, almost 60% have taken action, with 14 plus million of mostly federal funds helping counties buy brand new electoral systems. Problem is, many of these new systems still run, unbelievably in some sense, on old software that soon will be outdated, no longer serviced, and vulnerable to hackers. Like many of the 67 counties in Pennsylvania, the vast majority of the 10,000 election jurisdictions nationwide use Windows 7. Or even an older operating system to create ballots, program voting machines that aren't paper-based, tally votes of even paper-based machines, and report counts. That's significant, Melody. Windows 7 reaches its end of life on January 14th, 2020.
You know, God, you know, I have no, these tech companies have brought a lot of things to computers and so forth, but I'll tell you what, they just hold everybody hostage, and it's just wrong. It's just wrong, you know, because, you know, they create these programs, they create them to expire, they create the browsers to it. You have to continue to purchase it. You base your business on these softwares. I get billed every year for my account. It just irritates me. You know, I get billed hundreds and hundreds of dollars just so I can use this, and it's just like, just let me use the program that I used before. I don't need it updated every year. Oh, no. You know, we change it. I don't care what you change. It's a money machine these companies have created, and they hold each and every one of us hostage, and it just irritates me. You know, and it's just like this. Hey, Windows is just going to say, we're not going to provide any more technical support or produce patches to fix software vulnerabilities. And yeah, hackers can exploit that. So either you're going to have to step up to the pump and, you know, buy everything new and upgrade your whole system, or you're screwed. And it just irritates me. But Microsoft did come out, though, and said they would offer a Windows 7 security updates through 2023. Woo woo. Anyway, it's just my... Oh, they make me, they irritate me. And they
Melody...
make, and they're the richest people on earth. And it's, and we just sit back, well, okay, guess I need a new computer.
You know, we celebrate Wednesdays with Happy Hump Day greetings. We got to come up with something for Monday, because Mondays, because I love your Monday rants.
Well, it does. Doesn't that irritate you?
Well, yeah, of course. It'd be interesting to see when Microsoft announced, you know, it's no longer going to service Windows 7 compared to when these states or counties, as it might be, ordered the systems. That could even make it even more infuriating.
Yeah, and we're talking, you know, but, you know, hey, they're designed to be hacked. That's what, you know, it's just seriously. Everything. Remember the old story about Microsoft? Supposedly, every time you closed out Microsoft, that it would destroy a little bit of its memory or a little bit of its software. So, you know, depend. And I can't remember if you opened it or if you closed it. I mean, this goes back to the 90s. And it was all part of how they designed it. So they just can keep billing you and billing you and billing you. We're out of time, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you, Dave.
Hey, my pleasure.
And be safe tonight, ladies and gentlemen. And God bless.
Bye-bye.
In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me